Welcome to the Bedpost Podcast. I, of course, am your host, Erin Pym, and what I like to do here on the pod is bring fun and sexy guests into the studio to talk about sex and sexuality. Today, I'm very excited. This is someone all the way from across the pond. Super excited. Please welcome to the mic, everybody, Your Highness, Pro and Lifestyle Dom, Angelique Venom. Hello, Angelique.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm so excited to be here. I've been listening to your pod for a while.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
And I just always think I would love to sit down and chat to you.
Oh, hey, we're living the dream, baby.
Living the dream, yeah.
I'm just curious, do you like look at when other Doms are guesting specifically? Like, do you seek out kind of certain episodes, like kinky people or people you know? What's kind of your format there?
Well, to be honest, I go for a fairly scattergun approach. I'm interested in listening to all sorts of different people. It's always nice to listen to experiences of other workers. Not necessarily Doms, but, you know, sex workers and other people. I've mostly listened to other sex workers, but I'm probably going to start venturing into some of your,
you know what,
sexy other people.
You know what? I think at this point in the podcast, most of my guests are sex workers of some sort. Like, I think that's pretty true, which is awesome, yeah. I guess. You know.
That sounds like my friendship groups as well, mostly.
Same. I know, and I think that's why. It's just because those are the circles that I'm in mostly, you know what I mean? So those are the people, like you said, you know, those are my friends and those are the people I tend to connect with. So there you have it.
Yeah, totally. Same.
Perhaps we can start our little conversation off with, for people who don't know you, maybe just introducing the folks to who you are and what you do.
So I am a pro dom in Bristol in the UK. And as I've grown into that, I've become much more of a lifestyle dom. I've always been a kinky person. But when I first started pro domming in 2015, I think I was drawn to it because I was interested in kink, but I hadn't really had much space to explore it outside of there. And then I kept pro dom quite separate to my personal kink explorations. So I did that for about 3.5 years, and then I took a 3-year break for various reasons, and then I came back. And since then, I think in the interim, I've kind of explored my own kinky journey a lot more, and now it all just feels a lot more connected. I'd say more pro, more lifestyle, all kind of mixed in together, but with, you know, good solid boundaries in there.
Yeah, that's interesting because you hear of the pros that kind of do both things, right? They're either like kind of fully integrated and they're lifestyle doms, they're pros doing that all at the same time. And sometimes there are like crossover of what that looks like. And then there are other people that go into this profession that they don't have a lot of experience and they kind of just do it in their professional life with a bit of a separation, like you mentioned. So that is interesting to hear, like, that you're like, oh, it feels, what was the word you said? Now
integrated?
It feels more integrated. Yeah. Can you explain that a little bit for me?
I guess. So when I first started pro dom, I mean, you know, I kind of worked at the studio and I shadowed lots of people and I sat in on sessions and, you know, kind of did my learning journey that way. Mm-hmm. And I think, just as a new person in like such an intense field, I felt the need to, I think because I didn't know my own personal, like, deep boundaries with it, I felt the need to keep quite a big separation between that and my personal life. I think that was a good thing at the time because it probably kept me from maybe blurring my own boundaries where they shouldn't be blurred. But I think as I've grown older and gotten to know myself better, like, because there isn't really, you know, there isn't boundaries for me. It's not like a straight line. They're not very clear cut. Some of them are softer, some of them are firmer.
Sure.
So now I feel like I know myself well enough to be able to kind of integrate those two parts of my life, which are very obviously connected because it's all kind of in the field of kink. But yeah, like to be able to kind of integrate parts of the professional and the personal in more nuanced ways, because I know where my own personal boundaries are with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely does. I mean, demonstrating like professional boundaries and, you know, balancing that thing of like, ooh, how much of myself do I bring to this persona or this character, however you want to phrase it, and like, you know, how much do I let them in? You know, how many of my like personal kinks perhaps do I practice professionally as well? Do I keep some stuff for myself? That's like something that's very subjective to each provider. And, you know, practicing professional boundaries, that's a skill like any other that you develop over time, right? So you mentioned the thing of like, that was probably a good thing to just keep it totally separate at the beginning, because I might have like made some mistakes perhaps. Like, did you, hindsight, you think that was a good idea? Because it seems like that's the perspective.
Yeah, I totally think it was. and I still, you know, I still, with that awareness at the time, I still certainly made plenty of mistakes anyway.
Yeah.
You know, because a baby dom, you know, particularly one that hasn't had much practical experience in kink prior to kind of jumping into that world, like, you don't know where your own boundaries are with something until you have kind of stretched them, pushed them, felt around them and worked out what they are. And then there's the pressure, isn't there, of like, which is, it's not hilarious, but it's hilarious to me now that, as, you know, kind of understanding who I am as a dominant, that I felt so pressured to provide all of the services so that I could make people happy, you know, and that I had to do everything that I saw other doms offering. The silliest version of that, which actually kind of came round into a positive angle for me, is I have always been a very ticklish person. And so my feet were always a no-go zone. I would kind of half tickle myself putting my own socks on. I hated people touching my feet.
Wow.
I couldn't have someone paint my nails. It was like,
wow,
literally, ugh, full body, like, just no. But baby Dom Angelique thought that foot fetish wasn't essential for every single dominant because, you know, it's very popular. So I kind of forced myself
to do it.
I forced myself to do it and desensitize myself to people touching my feet, which...
And how'd that go for you?
Well, at the time, it was pretty triggering, to be honest. And I really don't recommend it, you know, in that context. However, interestingly, because I desensitized myself to it, I now love having my feet touched. And it's, I wouldn't say I have a fetish for it, but I really enjoy it. And certainly with someone that I'm very, like, sexually connected to, it can be a very erotic thing for me. So, you know.
Yeah, and again, that's that thing of like soft and hard boundaries, right? Like different boundaries for different clients, different boundaries for different people in our personal life.
So, you know,
that's a thing that perhaps, you know, with somebody you first met would be an absolutely no, but, you know, maybe a regular that you really have grown a connection with, or someone you're dating in your personal life that you feel a romantic connection with, then why not, you know?
Yeah, I mean, now I'm happy to stuff my feet in anyone's mouth.
Exactly.
Literally.
We're all so desensitized at this point.
Yeah, but I also like it now. So it's kind of like, you know, the hilarious power play of shoving your foot down someone's throat.
I love a foot gagging. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so much fun.
That's an amazing, I love that you gave us a specific example of that, because that's what I was going to ask, like, were you able to share about one of those kind of learning moments, you know? But that's a good one, like that thing of thinking you do have to offer everything. And I think that's kind of common to start that way, and then, because it's all a learning curve, like, you can only conceptualize you know, doing a thing, if you haven't done it, then it's like, yeah, I think I'd be fine with that. And then you do it and you're like, okay, maybe not. Or you do it a couple times and you're like, ooh, yeah, maybe not. So you kind of, that's a way of doing it, right? Start by doing a lot and then edit it down versus, yeah. You know, I'm sure there are folks that do the opposite way also of like just offering a small arena of things and maybe slowly expanding, or maybe not at all. Maybe they're a specialist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Would you consider yourself a specialist or a generalist?
I'm such a generalist.
Same.
I'm such a generalist. Because for me, you know, I don't think I have any specific fetishes. Like, okay, aside from medical, but I'll go into that more in a second because I don't think it's specifically a sexual kink, but it's more of a cerebral one. But I, you know, for me, the kind of, you know, I'm talking professionally and personally. Like, for me, it's the connection, it's the control, it's the power exchange, it's the intimacy and the kind of energy exchange and, like, the kind of getting into someone's mind. That's the thing for me. And really, I consider pretty much most of the activities around it, like, amazing tools to explore that with.
Yeah, I'm definitely power dynamic-based over activity-based as well. Like, if I get in that headspace, or, you know, it's maybe like dirty talk is happening surrounding that, like objectification is happening perhaps, then I can almost picture myself doing, you know, most activities happily if that other stuff is engaged. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And for me, it's like, you know, from a speaking from a like a professional perspective, like in session, like, you know, I like quite a lot of pre-scene negotiation. And, you know, for, I think you get the odd submissive who's like, you know, they don't want to give you a shopping list of things they're interested in because it feels too much like you're catering to their needs. And of course you are because you're a service.
You're a service provider.
But at the same time, like, my personal relationship with that is I want you to tell me where your head's at with these different things. I want to know your interests. Like, what gets you going? Because I will then find somewhere where our interests cross. And for me, that's like a really interesting place to explore. So even if I'm not physically attracted to you, you know, like if you've got two or three or even one thing that you're interested in that I'm interested in, and we have a little bit of chemistry, then we can have an absolutely fucking great time. And it can be a really intense experience for me as well. And it can be a really, you know, often sexual experience that doesn't always come into the room when I'm topping someone professionally, but it does sometimes. You know, it's like, it's about finding those common. You know, for me it's about finding the commonality and then being able to get into someone's head around that specific activity.
Yes. Yeah, I see couples a lot and I'm not sure exactly what it's about, but usually when I do see a couple, there's some sort of educational element or there's some sort of like troubleshooting element where they're like, you know, they want me to do this and I don't really know how, or I don't know how to initiate that or like really do that with enthusiasm because it's maybe not in my top 10. And often the thing is doing exactly what you're talking about. It's like, okay, let's have a really in-depth negotiation surrounding this activity. You know what I mean? Because there will be crossover somewhere about the intentionality of this, of how it makes them feel and like how nice it would be for you to make them feel that way. And this is just kind of a way that you can do that. Like it's a love language. You know what I mean? Like even at the most basic kind of idea of like, you know, the person wants to do this thing. It makes them happy, makes them feel sexy, powerful, whatever. And you like this person. So you want them to feel happy, sexy, powerful, whatever. So, you know, it just even at the basest kind of idea of that, of like, that makes them happy. So, you know, you like to make them happy, right? So like just trying to do that those mental acrobatics first, yeah. That often kind of alerts people that like, oh yeah, I would like to make them happy. And, you know, that can help me do that. Yeah.
So it's kind of about finding the connective tissue. Because I think, you know, an activity is an activity. And if you don't understand why somebody likes it, then you might not understand why it can be enjoyable. And I'm certainly not saying do activities you don't like. But if it's, you know, within the realms of comfort and within your boundaries, but it's not something you're particularly interested in at first thought, But some, you know, if you can understand somebody else's enthusiasm for it, that can quite often change your
perspective.
Like perspective and, like, you know, desire to engage with that activity.
Yeah, 100%. Are you able to talk about, like, what kind of questions maybe you ask during negotiation or how you typically do your negotiation?
Yeah, so, I mean, I get people to send me their kind of interests via email as well. And I make it quite clear that that's, you know, that's just kind of for me to, I guess, I don't really pre-plan sessions at this point. But I guess it's just for me to kind of have a quick understanding of some of their touch points. But certainly the first session I see someone, I kind of get them to describe their interests, their kinks, and what that means. You know, so if someone says I'm into humiliation, I'm like, well, what is humiliating for you? Because for some people it's being spat on.
Yep.
You know, and some people it's being kind of, you know, told that their penis is small and it's unsatisfying. Or, you know, there are so many different things that someone might find humiliating. For some people it's just being looked at in a certain way or, you know, examined in a certain way. So it's kind of, I like to understand what it is about people's specific interests that they like. You know, is it, I don't necessarily ask them, like, what, how do you want to feel in this session, but through discussing each individual activity, what is it about that you enjoy, it's kind of gets a well-rounded picture of, yeah, who they are. And they don't always know that, but you can usually get something.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite questions as well, to just, they're like, oh, well, I'm into, you know, I'd like to do foot fetish today. And I'm like, ooh, okay, what do you find interesting about foot fetish, you know? And that usually kind of draws some information as far as how they want to feel or intentionality or, like, even what specific part of foot worship, because you can do a foot worship scene like 100 different ways. It's like, do you like socks? Do you like stockings? Fishnets? Barefoot only? Do you want it in your mouth? Do you want to be cleaning boots? Do you want to be, like, there's literally so many things you can do with it. Just like you said, with humiliation, it's like such a broad word, could literally mean anything. So, like, what specifically do you find interesting about it? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's kind of, you know, when you're sat with a person that's never seen you before and they might be nervous, you can just ask those questions in very different ways. There's always, like, a way of asking a question or a different question you can ask to actually, you know, that moment when someone's a bit like, oh, I don't really know. And then you, and then you're like, you know, what is it you like about feet? And they're like, okay, here we go. And then they just jump into a spiel and you're like, okay, you've asked them a question they know the answer to.
Yeah. Totally. What, how do you navigate, like, when somebody does give that answer that they don't know? You know, you're asking them, you know, what do you find interesting about it, whatever, and they're like, I don't know. What do you do at that point?
I mean, sometimes I'll offer them things like, is it the power exchange? You know, is it a humiliation thing? Is it, you know, a bit praise? And, you know, they might kind of slightly move towards one of those, and then I guess I'll kind of interrogate a little bit more gently. Interrogate's probably a bit of a strong word. Gently probe. But I'm quite good at getting things out of people. I'm a trained coach as well, so getting people to talk about stuff is one of my things.
Yeah, Mia's like doing a podcast. I have to tell you that it really does, there is crossover in negotiation. Like, I'm good at just getting people to talk with me.
Yeah.
It's a skill. Again, it's a skill like any other, right?
It really is, for sure. Yeah.
Extracting information.
Extracting information. I think there are several jobs we could do.
That would be useful. I know, right?
Yeah, I'm glad I do the one I do, though.
Yeah, same. Yeah. So what do you do from there, usually, with your sessions? So, you know, they send a form basically just to inform you, you know, what tools you might be using or what thing you might be wearing. That's literally all I use the forum for. I just want to know what I should be wearing that day. And then most of it happens in person. You do negotiations surrounding, like, some a lot more specific things. And how do you kind of transition to into a scene from there?
So, I mean, I also go into medical stuff and safety stuff and safe words and all that jazz. But I have my own dungeon, and so I have a little meet and greet area. So I'm like, cool, you know, if you have any more questions, right, then I'll take them through and I'll leave them alone to get undressed and tell them where to put their clothes. You know, and the kind of the vibe in my actual play space is quite different to how it is in my meet and greet area. It's very dimly lit and they have aromas and candles and stuff. So I think that immediately makes the switch up. And then I'll tell them, tell me when you're ready. And they're like, ready, ready, Your Highness. And then, because I, where I work, just for slight discretion, I answer the door to my clients in regular clothes. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, I've whipped off my trackies and I'm suddenly in something a lot more sexy and I put my high shoes on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then kind of I walk into the space and I like to make a bit of a song and dance about that.
Yeah, make a bit of an entrance, right?
Make a bit of an entrance. I love a really slow start to a session, even if we're going to do some frantic stuff. Because I think, you know, it's kind of, it sets the tone. I like to walk in quite slowly and just, you know, because they get the sound of my shoes on the floor. And I'm like, eyes down.
Yeah.
So they're kind of on all fours hearing me approach them. And then I'll just stand in front of them and build some intensity. Just stood there and they might automatically go down to kiss my shoe without asking. And I'm like, did I tell you to do that? No. Pause. Yeah, so, you know, I quite like to lead in slowly. I always start with kind of kissing my feet. And I'll quite often, this is one of my favourite things to do, is I'll just start walking off and they kind of stop. And I'm like, did I tell you to stop? No. And then they're crawling behind me trying to kiss my feet as I'm kind of
walking. While you're
around.
Walking.
Yeah, but, you know, I might want to go and get a strap-on harness from somewhere, yeah, or, you
things
know,
to
some
do.
Impact
see.
Implements. Or, you know, I might just want them to crawl around trying to kiss my feet while I walk at different paces.
Fabulous.
I think it's just quite a nice way to set the dynamic of... It's very illustrative of sub-dom dynamic, isn't it?
Very much so. I love this, like, I'm always so interested how people kind of, you know... make that transition essentially, right, from negotiation to zine of like, okay, how do we establish like this power dynamic just like immediately when we begin, you know what I mean? That's always just so insightful of like, because you want to like, well, I'll speak from my intention is like, I want to disarm them. I want it to feel different, right, than before, because in negotiation there's no power dynamic present. You know, we're essentially peers. That's the way we can communicate openly about our wants, needs, desires, limits, boundaries, etc. However, when the scene starts, like I want them to feel like something is shifted. Yeah. And I want them to also feel in their body. Some people like come in, you know, I'm not sure if this happens to you, but like people say usually, oh, I'm quite nervous. I'm actually feeling quite nervous. And I always tell them I really like that energy, you know, because the flip side, why you're feeling nervous is because you've kind of done something new and exciting, right? So like the flip side of the coin of nervousness is like excitement. It's the same feeling, right? It's like positive stress and negative stress, right?
But, yeah.
I always, so we talk a bit, you know, we do the negotiation, they usually feel a little less nervous. And then when we start the scene, I kind of want them to feel nervous again. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
So I like do things that are where they'll be like, uh-oh. But so like I do that too, where I like do some corrections right off the bat. Like when I open the door again, you know, I've asked them to kneel in the middle of the rug, but like if they're not kneeling in the particular way that I like, you know, right away I'll be like, ah. And I'll try to catch them, and I'll try to, even with, you know, look good little subbies, they want to behave. But so sometimes you have to find things, you have to make up things they're doing wrong, you know. Just to chastise them a little bit, to like take them down a peg right off the top.
Well, exactly. It's establishing the dynamic, really, isn't it?
Isn't it?
And
yeah.
Who is in charge here?
I love that. Yeah, and I do like the thing of, like you said, they get undressed by themselves in the room, you know. I do the same thing with them. Because is that or is that not like an absolute physical representation of who's in power and who's in not, then clothed female, naked male, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Not to say all our clients are cis men, but most of them probably are. Actually, I won't assume that for you. Is that the case?
Yes, for the most part.
Most part, right?
I get some fun exceptions here and there, but for the most part, cis men, yeah.
Yeah. Are you able to talk about, like, the different types of sessions you might facilitate? Because you said you were a generalist, so I'm sure there's a long list. Maybe talk about some of your favorite types of scenes to facilitate.
Ooh. So I had a really fun fisting session yesterday.
Lovely. I think I saw your post on Twitter about it.
Yeah.
It's a little picture. Yep.
You know, and I like fisting. I really enjoy anal play. Caveat, if someone knows how to clean properly, which there are a percentage of people that do and a percentage that don't. And there's no shame in it. I'm not going to be grossed out if there's something accidental that you cannot predict. But I think knowing that someone has put some effort into prep for that kind of play. But it's probably the deepest I've ever been inside a human.
That's a way to put that. Yeah, that's a way to say that. Yeah,
I went past my elbow.
Wow.
And I bear in mind, I'm being very, very cautious here.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, because anyone who's fisted knows there are kind of various sphincters. There's, you know, the first one's the bum hole, and then there's kind of another one, and then, you know, as you go along, essentially the guts. different chambers open up. So I got as far as I think it was possible for anyone to go before it turned a sharp corner that you couldn't navigate safely. So I was treading very carefully.
So how long, for people that may be like, holy crap, I didn't know that was possible, like how long does it take you to get there? Or how much training is involved, like, you know, for months? Or like, what's the process here to get to that point?
Ooh, I don't know how well I can answer this question, because the specific person I was fisting was someone who's very experienced, and I hadn't actually seen him before. Neither of us were expecting me to be able to go that far.
And then there you ended up.
There we ended up. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it takes time. It takes training. It's one of those things where, you know, if you've never done any anal play before, you might start off with a butt plug, and then you might start off with some dildos or some strap-on play. And, you know, you can kind of train for depth, or you can train for girth, I suppose, or both. And so I think it's one of those things that, you know, you probably are going to be fisted for a while once you get to there, which is probably a feat in and of itself. But you're going to be kind of in the anus for a while before you start venturing forth. Because I think, you know, with a lot of exploration of holes in general, bum holes and vaginas, it's actually a lot to do with relaxation. So it's your body trusting, you know, as the recipient, it's your body trusting you to kind of let go of the tension that's there.
And yeah, it's that mind-body connection.
Yeah, it's your body being able to say, I've done this before and it didn't end badly, so we can relax, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's kind of trying different toys and stuff. Because ultimately our bodies just really respond to fear and relaxation, and it's kind of, you know, a lot of the physical responses we have are down to like how chill is our nervous system about the fact that this is happening. So yeah, I think it probably takes a different amount of time for different people based on, you know, how well their body trusts them and how well you trust the person you're playing with. But yeah, it was really fun.
What was fun about it, if I can ask?
I don't find it a sexual turn on, but it's just there is something incredibly miraculous about having more than half your arm inside another human, because it seems impossible.
Really. Yeah. Amazing.
And it's the power exchange of wearing an adult man like a glove. A glove that goes past the elbow.
Oh, goodness. Yep.
You know, it's something.
An opera length glove,
opera length glove, if you will. And I kind of, you know, when I was in there, I was having just like a very gentle, of course, just feel around. I could feel his ribs. And I was like, this feels medical. And I like it.
Another reason it felt fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm actually teaching a vaginal fisting workshop on March 17th. I don't know when this is coming out, but it's quite funny we have a local sex club, and you know, there's the regulars, you know, who have seen it all, done it all, you know, but on the weekends, you know, sometimes the crowd skews a little younger, you know. Yep. We see people come in, like, from the periphery towns of Toronto, you know, come in. Maybe a lot of new folks or kind of youngish adults, you know. So you always get, like, a variety of reactions when you're doing a fisting presentation.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Bedpost Podcast is sponsored by Come As You Are. Founded as a worker-owned cooperative, Come As You Are has a fundamentally anti-capitalist and feminist approach to sexual pleasure, health, and education. Come As You Are doesn't profit from your pleasure and only stocks products that they truly love and believe in. Come As You Are has been voted best sex shop in Toronto since 1997. Check them out at comeasyouare.com or 254 Augusta Avenue in Toronto's own Kensington Market. We are also sponsored by Club M4 Toronto. Club M4 is the largest sexually charged lifestyle club in the GTA. And now you can go to their website, www.clubm4.com. If anything looks interesting and you want to check it out, head on down to Club M4 at 1989 Dundas Street, Mississauga. What else? What are some of your other kind of faves that you can think of off the top of the dome?
Ooh, faves. I mean, to be honest, like, I worked as a stripper for a long time.
Oh, did you?
Age 19. I was a stripper for on and off for like 11, 12 years.
Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. Not full time all the time, but it was kind of my main bread and butter for a long time, which I really loved. So I'm really into the sensual tease side of things. I enjoy that. So actually, tie and tease is one of my faves because I just, you know, proximity and kind of denial are just so fun to play with.
I love how you call it tie and tease. I call it tease and denial, or
tease and denial, tie, you know, and tease.
Tie and tease. I just like the tie and tease. I like that. I might start using that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm thinking is tease and denial. I suppose denying orgasm, whereas tie and tease is kind of just being in close proximity to someone and being very sensual, but not necessarily with sexual contact in it.
Yeah. So do you bring those do you bring some moves to the table because of your experience?
Oh, yeah.
I can imagine.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I worked hard to be that good at moving.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure I was always a relatively good mover, but when you work as a stripper, you learn how to move like a, I don't know, something, you know, when you see, this is a terrible comparison, but you know, when you see like a sea lion swimming through the water, they're just very, or a penguin or something, you know, in the water and they're so fluid.
Yep.
That's a really unsexy comparison. I could have literally mentioned
sexy
anything else.
Penguin.
Sexy penguin.
I'm with you.
What I'm talking about though, right? But you know, to bring that kind of level of fluidity and I guess like, it's almost like a somatic understanding of your own body and what it can do and kind of, yeah, bring to life that kind of sexual oozing physical movement.
Oh my.
You know, oozing. I'm not going to waste my 11 years. Thank you very much. And not bring that to like, you know, my current work and passion.
Absolutely. Are there like other skills that you can think of that maybe you kind of honed or developed while dancing that you brought over?
I think talking to people.
Yeah, that's a huge part of that job, right?
Approaching people. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just being confident to, because I mean, you know, when you first start working in a strip club, your job is to approach multiple men and proposition them.
Yes.
You know, in an environment, and people, you know, people think it's easy because they're like, oh, well, you're really hot and wearing sexy underwear. I'm like, yeah, but so is every other 30 women who's working that night. Yeah, so it's kind of, it teaches you how to interact and, I guess, seduce in a way that's it's kind of fun and it's quite forward, I guess. But I'd say that that experience as a stripper, I've taken it into every single part of my life. It's one of the best things I've ever done for self-confidence and just kind of ability to take up space in spaces where it's not always invited. I don't mean it in a bad way. I just mean it, in spaces where it's harder for someone in a femme body to take up space. It's kind
Certainly.
of given me an ability to yeah, I can be here. I can occupy this space.
And at that age, to do it like essentially as a young adult, I'm sure that set you on like a very confident path. Well, I don't want to assume anything, but just from what you said, that's a lot of good messaging to receive at that age.
Yeah, totally. I mean, of course, it comes with its challenges, as all
Sure.
labor does. But yeah, I was also like, I had a child very young. I had my son at 18. So I'd literally moved from the countryside to the city of Bristol because I was like, fuck raising a child in this backwater. And then I was like, right, next, become a stripper. But do you know what? Part of it was I wanted to do something exciting because I loved being a parent, but I also didn't want it to be my life. My entire life. And so doing something that made me have some sense of autonomy and power over my own body, and also a good way to make some cash, and honestly, a job that works around a
Your
sleeping child.
schedule. Yeah. Oh wow. I love that. So, what was the what did it look like you moving from that job to your current one? Was there like did it go right from one into the other or did you do other things in your story?
Okay, so I was a stripper for years, and I'd always been curious about other forms of sex work, and had wanted to explore. But I honestly, I didn't think full service sex work would suit me necessarily, so that wasn't my first port of call. But basically, I made friends with someone in the strip club who's like, "Oh yeah, I worked for as a dom for a bit." I was like, "Oh my God." Basically, I just didn't know how to do it. I'd Googled and tried to look on forums on like how to become a dominatrix. And she actually introduced me to and gave me the location of this dungeon in Bristol. And she's like, "Well, I just called them and they told me to come in and I shadowed people." I was like, "Wow, it's that simple." I think I literally the next day I rang them up. I was like, "Hi, help me, Dom, please." I was just, over the moon to find out about that. So I continued stripping while I was domming as well. And training to be a dom. But yeah, and at some point, I can't remember where in the timeline, I did do full service for a while, which, as I suspected, didn't particularly suit me.
Why, as you suspected.
I mean, to be totally brutally honest about it,
Was it boring? Was it boring?
no. I mean, it
No.
was boring. It was boring. But part of it was I know that there are plenty of people who are dominants who offer full service, but that wasn't really on my radar then. So part of it was being in the slightly having to be so nicey nice to people and give
Oh
them
my
that kind
God.
of submissive girlfriend vibe. But also, honestly, I'm very specific with how I can be penetrated.
Okay.
And a lot of the kind of sex that these guys want to have with you just really, really hurt my cervix.
No, there you
That's it.
go. Yeah,
That's
that's
it.
it. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And I'm sure there are plenty of full service sex workers out there that don't offer being fucked from behind slightly enthusiastically, but that really doesn't work very well for me. So, and also I think I like to try things out, so I kind of tried that a bit, and I sure had some positive experiences with it, but when I realized I could be a dom instead, I was like, this is much more me.
Yeah, I felt more authentic.
Yeah, exactly. It really, really was. Yeah, it
Yeah.
was great though because I was working in the strip club, and I had a really great manager, a woman. And she, the rules on contact in the UK really vary from council to council. So the local
Okay.
authority gets to decide how much contact you can have, whether you can touch someone's shoulder or whether you have to stand 2 meters away. But this was
Okay.
a relatively high contact club, and there were no, they couldn't touch you. You couldn't overtly sexually touch them, but you were allowed to kind of sit on their lap a little and, put your arm around them. But I every now and then would get a client who was clearly submissive. And she used to turn her blind eye to me, like slapping them around and kneeing them in the balls in the dance room. That's what they wanted. And she knew that I wasn't going to, we knew each other quite well. So she knew I wasn't going to be doing anything that they didn't want. So that was fun. So I think the path to Dom was fairly like
It's fairly
clear-cut.
obvious, it seemed like, yeah.
Yeah, even if it wasn't obvious to me the whole time. When I look back, I'm like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, I was kneeing clients in the balls at the club. Yeah, yeah. That should have been a good indicator for me.
Good indicator, absolutely.
Are you able to tell me, because, you know, a lot of folks come up to me, like even last night we were at a munch that was hosted by our play space ritual chamber. We had a munch and, you know, it happens where someone comes up to me and they're like, ooh, how did you become a dominatrix? You know, I am interested in doing so. And I tell them my story, and mine is pretty, you know, clear cut like yours is. Like I literally just contacted I contacted the headmistress, and she asked me to come in for an interview, and we talked, and then I started really soon after that. We had a bit of rapport before that, but I'm specifically wondering about like the training elements that you mentioned. You said like you shadowed some scenes and stuff like that. Can you tell me a little bit about more about like the specifics of that, and you know, just maybe how long you did that before actually becoming a pro yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go first up and say, I don't think I was doing it for long enough.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
You know, the dungeon that I was working at is owned by a submissive man. And In that, he has a lot of confidence. Right. He has a lot of confidence in people's abilities that sometimes I would say surpass their actual skills.
Yeah, misplaced confidence,
enthusiasm that is kind of turns into misplaced confidence. Mm. Thankfully, there were some very generous doms there that kind of took me under their wing and let me shadow them. And you know, they'd let me know, oh, I've got a caning session on Wednesday. Do you want to come in and shadow that? Mm. Or, you know, I've got a client for this particular activity. Do you want to come in and do that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were kind of, the place that I worked has residence doms. So there'll be one dom for every day of the week. And then you can be a visiting dom. So you can book in sessions on those days if you're not the resident. But the resident gets priority over, like, which of the playrooms.
Right.
So a day came up and they were like, why don't you take this day? And I was like, okay.
So how long after was that from when you had started kind of shadowing and whatnot?
I think probably about 3 months.
Okay.
And, you know, that's, but in those 3 months, I feel like the frequency of, you know, the amount of sessions I shadowed
was not a lot.
Was not as many as I would have liked. So I was a little bit hesitant. But do you know what? I think because I generally am a relatively responsible person, I like to think. And I've, you know, from quite a young age, I had my head screwed on pretty well. So I think I was quite careful just to kind of monitor my own journey with learning. You know, if I didn't know how to do something, I wouldn't just be like, ah, fuck it. I would try and find somebody to show me something, but I'm sure there are things that I learnt to do that someone had told me how to do rather than show me, which is slightly crazy to me now.
Yeah, hindsight 2020, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just really tough, I think, for people to find places to learn. And, you know, I'm not suggesting there should be like a specific training program for dominance.
Yes, because no, me neither. Yeah.
I really don't agree with certification. I mean, that's a whole other conversation. Regulation.
Yeah.
But I think it's quite difficult for people to find ways of learning. And I'm sure there are great courses out there. I know there are doms that offer training courses and online courses and stuff. And I think they definitely have a lot of value. But also, I think just being in a room with someone that can show you things, and you can kind of not only learn the safety elements and the, you know, the practical application of certain skills, but also you kind of learn how to hold that space in a way that, you know, not only creates the ambience of the session, but I think the way that you hold space in session also has a lot to say about how safe you can be there as well.
Yeah. And like that whole thing of like, okay, yeah, here's how you do the activity, but there's a lot more to this job than just doing the activity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
It's like a lot energetically that's happening. There's a lot like underneath all these activities that's happening.
Totally.
All sorts of stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think to some extent you can only learn those parts by doing. So I think, you know, there can be the flip side of the coin where you think you need to train for such a long amount of time, but then you're not ready to jump in. And I think, you know, if you don't have access to good places to train, I don't, you know, I still think you can do it. I just think you need to be mindful about what activities you're doing. Like, start with things you feel confident in and that you know you can do safely. You know, get clear on what your boundaries are in terms of how you interact with people and your expectations for them. And, like, don't pressure yourself to offer everything until you are comfortable and confident with those activities.
Definitely. Yeah. 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 I think at the Munch, there's usually a bit of an educational element. So last night, one of the there's like a little quiz that was happening, and they had to go to say whether the thing was true or false or whatever. And one of the questions was, you should practice your single tail whip technique on a person.
Okay.
And they talked about that's false, obviously. You should, you know, have honed your technique before you try it on a person. And we talked about all the different inanimate objects that you could practice a single tail whip on. It was a very funny discussion.
Potatoes, cream cakes, cushions.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's that thing of like, and that's how I started. I'll say this as a caveat as well. Like, when I started, I was hired pretty much right away because I was a kinkster in my personal life for a decade or probably even longer, honestly, but, in a topping and doming context. And, you know, I had a lot of experience in a small amount of activities, right? So when I started offering, you know, sessions in just this kind of small circle of things I was very familiar and confident with, right? And then over time, you know, took classes, did the same thing as like shadowing, duoing with people who were much more experienced in the activities than I was and all that kind of stuff before I was able to like add lots and lots of more things to my repertoire, basically. But yeah, ideally you're not doing something for the very first time in a session.
Ideally. Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I guess, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it, where everyone has their own path there.
And certainly.
There aren't necessarily wrong paths, but there are ways of doing things safer.
Yeah, just to try and do the risk mitigation, the harm reduction surrounding the stuff. Surrounding that topic, actually, I wonder if this might be a topic of conversation for our last little bit in the episode. I did a consult with someone recently, and it was a half hour long, and man, I could have talked about this for 2 hours. It actually kind of inspired me to write a class on this topic. And the question was, how do you know when someone is approaching their limit? And what if you have a submissive, you know, who is stubborn and won't safe word when they probably should?
Ooh.
What is your instinct, your instinctual response to that?
Partly it depends how well I know that person. So that's, I mean, there are different factors, different contexts. I am pretty intuitive now when it comes to seeing that someone's close to a limit.
Yes.
Yeah. I very rarely experience people using safe words. And I think ultimately I will take them as close to the edge as I deem appropriate in the session. And then I'll stop what I'm doing or reduce it.
So you use your judgment.
I use my judgment, yeah.
Which is based in a lot of experience at this point.
So much experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's down to kind of recognizing body language and kind of understanding the kind of minutia of somebody's response. And also, you know, with the body language thing as well, it's not as obvious because, you know, I think most of us can recognize where it can be really misinterpreted. So it's like, how much has this person changed state? Yep. Like, you know, because obviously as someone goes into subspace, their kind of ability to communicate or even express what they're feeling can become quite limited, and that can be just because they're in a very transcendent space or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think there can be very minute signals that somebody is going somewhere a little bit different. And, you know, if I'm getting a lack of response from someone, or they seem to be in a quite a I guess, a fixed state. I don't know. It's quite hard to explain it, but there's like an underlying tension there. I hate to use the, I mean, I'm not judging anyone else who's it, but I don't like to be like, use the term I'm an empath.
Right.
I don't know why. I think there are lots of cultural connotations and live, laugh, love caught up in the kind of ideas around what that means.
Right.
But I have a very strong ability to pick up on somebody else's emotions that they're experiencing, whether that's through subtleties in body language or just like perception of tension. So, you know, as I'm going harder on an activity, I'm really keeping an eye on what's happening in that person's body, in the way they're breathing, in the color of their skin. You know, all of those little things. And I think probably a load of them are very subconscious that I just kind of know are there.
Yeah. I had like a similar response, like my guttural kind of response to this was like, well, you know, ideally, if one of you isn't very experienced in this scenario, then you don't have the experience of kind of sensing when something is wrong, like having that intuition that you've developed over a lot of time with a lot of partners, etc. You know, you got to negotiate how far you want to go with the intensity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got to be transparent about, I'm new at this, or I'm here to explore, or I want to my limits to be pushed a bit on this thing. Like, those have all got to be talked about beforehand. And then through, you know, if this is a partnership where you're doing repeated scenes together, it's like, well, you could be adding intensity every time, check in after, did that still feel good, was my read good on this, could I have pushed you more, did you want me to do more, did we, you know, like, did I, when I sensed that you were done, were you done, like all of that stuff. Because the body language can't be misinterpreted for sure. And then to know in the moment also is kind of difficult. It's like, we'll check a couple days after, because sometimes, you know, you might get a bit of drop, or you might reflect on and be like, you know what, I don't feel like I need to do that much.
Yeah.
Next time.
Yeah, you know, like, absolutely.
Whatever it is, right? But then I got all these questions were going in my head. I was like, ooh, so is this question about like perceiving when someone's going too far, is that really sometimes a reflection of our own boundaries surrounding certain activities, and we're kind of projecting that this is too far, but the other person is perfectly happy to go far and farther, and they're, you know, never have any kind of poor feelings surrounding it at all? Is that actually us coming up against our own boundaries on the activity? And then I was thinking of all of those nuanced kind of things. I don't know. I'm not sure if I've really thought about my boundaries as a top in that way before.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting.
Yeah, you know, I was like ooh.
if I'm coming up against my boundary, then that's somewhere that I know I need to stop. And maybe it might be something that I might be able to reapproach in the future with that person if they're like, you know, I could have gone on for longer.
Yep.
Like, maybe with that information, my boundary might actually shift.
Yes.
But if I'm approaching what feels like my boundary and I'm not sure if I'm approaching their boundary, then we're stopping.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, what I said to the person, actually, I was like, short answer, I would stop or move on to another activity. Long answer, book me for a consult if you want to have an in-depth conversation about, like, kink harm mitigation.
Yeah,
and then
right.
They did. And then they did book it. Yeah. I was like,
that's fabulous. Great.
Good.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so good.
Am I correct in assuming that this space that you work out of is yours?
It is. I mean, it's
tell me about
least,
it.
It's in a space in Bristol, actually. So I've returned to Pro Dom tentatively after a 3-year break and overcoming chronic illness, which I'd been recovered from probably for about 6 months when I started back. And so I was like, yeah, I'm just going to chuck up a Twitter account and open an email and, you know, pop a tweet or here, two here. At the time, I was working from the dungeon I trained at a little bit. And I hadn't really... And then I think, you know, a few days later, I kind of went to create an Instagram thinking, I'll start in slowly. Mm-hmm. And then I went to verify the Instagram account and looked in my inbox and I had like 4 booking inquiries, which I don't know why it shocked me.
That's how it works.
So I did my first session back, which was fun. And I knew that I really wanted to approach things differently. I didn't want to be a resident at the establishment. I kind of wanted to feel like I was much more independent. And I knew another pro-dom who had actually shadowed me, I think, but has since grown into an incredible dom with their an amazing like practice. That's Madame M. She's wonderful. But she had her own space, which I had never seen because she acquired that after I'd stopped being a pro-dom for a while. Mm-hmm. And I asked her if I could work from her space sometimes because I kind of just wanted to diversify and not feel too attached to one establishment. And she said, yes, you can, but I'm giving it up in October because I've moved to Brighton and I'm opening my own space there. So sorry, it won't be very available to you for long. And I said, or... so within 2 months of starting back, tentatively feeling it out, I had my own dungeon, which was very, very quick.
Yeah, that's not tentative.
No. I had to have a real sit down with myself and do some real good thinking about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I basically, thankfully, very kink-friendly landlord, knows what is happening in there, and it used to belong to another amazing dom before her, Nikki French, who a lot of people will know. So it's been there for like 5 years. So I basically purchased the equipment off of Madame M and took over the lease.
Wow. And
yeah, it had probably about 80% of the equipment that I needed to get going.
Mm-hmm. That's ideal.
Yeah. And so I just bought a few bits and worked in it as is for a while. And then and then there was a fire in the building in the studio above me and it was shut for a month.
No.
And thankfully there was no damage because I did pour several thousands of litres of water into the building directly above my unit. And thankfully there was no damage because at that point I didn't have insurance yet because it was really literally, I'd hardly used the place. And then I couldn't access it for a month, which was kind of annoying.
Oh my God.
I know. Immediate drama. Yeah, but then I got back in there, which was really nice, and redecorated it.
I have to say, I love the like color story that's happening.
Oh yeah.
So is that good. From your background as a medfetter? This like kind of hospital green almost aesthetic to it?
No, it's, you know, in person it's not so hospital green. I think it shows up like that in the light. I love teals and greens. I find it very calming. And I really just wanted to move away from the black, red and purple aesthetic. It's not me. I like red on plants and other people, but I'm not a red person.
On plants and other people?
And I can openly insult the flooring now that I know that neither of the people who had it before me chose it. But it had a red vinyl floor and white walls. And somebody had painted it, kind of had these big, because it's like an old historical factory building. So it's got like exposed beams, and then it's got these big retaining beams and these kind of slightly, those pillars that look slightly Grecian. But someone had badly painted them gold in like cheap looking school looking paint, and it was just, for me, who is a bit of an interior designer, really upsetting. So it was very nice to put a new floor in and paint all the walls and, you know, make it look good.
Amazing. And like you were kind of interested in just kind of renting the space, you know, using the space part time, like, so do people do that, renting the space from you, or do you have some house doms, or like what's the setup with your space and who works out of there?
So I work out of there, and then I have a small bunch of other doms that work out of there, who I know quite well. So the setup is I can't really give the external code to the building to anybody. I have a limit on how many people I can let to use the space in that respect. So
that makes sense.
A kind of a know and trust thing, in terms of like being able to regularly use it and let yourself in our small Bristol dom community. But I do hire it out to other people for like filming days, or sometimes there's a visiting mistress, but that just means that I go and let them in to the space. And it's really nice. We have a great community of sex workers in Bristol. We have the Bristol Sex Workers Collective, which is a very little grassroots organization, which was nice because I was one of the founding members about 7 years ago. And then I kind of totally, when I stopped sex work, I kind of moved out of that. And then I came back and rejoined the collective, and it's thriving.
Yeah, goodness.
We do a lot of activism and kind of peer support. We had to like fight Bristol City Council, who was trying to shut down all of the strip clubs. Wow. Success.
Goodness, wow.
So it's really nice. And through that, there's like quite a good community of DOMs and other sex workers. So there's, it's quite easy to be connected in Bristol with other workers and support each other. And it's really nice being able to offer a space, like another space in Bristol that people can work out of.
Yeah. What's the name of the space?
It's the House of Venom.
Yeah, I love that. How perfect.
Oh, how perfect. Yeah, it's slightly ridiculous, but... You know,
no, it's the perfect amount of ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we're at the point. Angelique Venom, are you able to tell us all the ways we can find and follow you, where, you know, where people can contact you, perhaps, and shower you with gifts and money?
Yes. Yes, please. Gifts and money. You can find me on Twitter at Angelique Venom. You can find me on Instagram at Angelique Venom. I do have an OnlyFans, but I'm actually going to switch over to LoyalFans. I've just started creating lots of online content, and I haven't really started putting it out there yet. So you will also be able to find me upon clip stores. Currently, my website is at mistress-angelique.co.uk, but I will probably be migrating that to angeliquevenom.com. Okay. Have a look and see which one it is whenever you listen to the episode, I guess.
Great. For me, folks, I'm the most active on Twitter. I'm at theladypim1. But if you must follow me on Instagram, I'm at theladypim or at the bedpost podcast. I'm 40 and I just started a TikTok. Follow me on there. See how badly I do. At theladypim. The podcast also has a Patreon. It is the Bedpost Show. We have a YouTube channel. It is the Bedpost Show as well. I never like to go an episode without thanking the lovely lady who does all the original music for my podcast. Her name is Stephanie Copeland. You can follow her at stephcopelandmusic.com. And Angelique Venom, Your Highness, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you for an hour. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been so much fun. Honestly, I listened to your show and I'm like, I want to have chats with this person.
Oh, I love it. Well, I hope it lived up to your expectations.
It really has. It's surpassed them.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, I hope everyone that's listening, it also surpassed your expectations. We will see you next week talking about sex and sexuality on the Bedpost podcast. Until then, get fucked, everybody. Goodbye.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.